In the early dark of September 28, 2023, an ancient sycamore tree in the north of England fell to its death. And this was not a natural death. The tree had been purposefully sawed and felled, and this tree was not just any tree. It was the famed sprout of Sycamore Gap, a picturesque dip in Hadrian's Wall, beloved around the world for its stunning beauty and poetry, a place where one of the great walls of the Western world was nevertheless dwarfed by the vast and stunning Northumbrian landscape. The tree, like Hadrian's Wall, was ruined, and yet even its destruction preserves a memory of something that was once thought to be great. Hadrian's Wall survives as the largest Roman monument in the world, and like so much else from the Pax Romana, its story is a remarkable one. Let's talk about it on this episode of the Pax Romana podcast. Episode 39, Another Brick in Hadrian's Wall. If you're new to the podcast, my name is Colin Elliott. I'm a historian at Indiana University, the author of a couple books, which you can look up. And I started this podcast to bring the sources and stories from my college classroom to the general public. And I just want to say thank you for supporting me. The podcast is now charting on the history rankings, which is very exciting. We got over 10 million impressions on Spotify alone last month. None of this would be happening without you, and so I just want to say thank you very much. And when you're finished with this episode, and if you've enjoyed the podcast, I hope you'll give the podcast a rating or leave a review. It means a lot to me. All right, let's get on with the episode. Longtime listeners will remember episode 14, when Roman soldiers first invaded Britain in 55 BC under the command of Julius Caesar. But Caesar's soldiers couldn't establish a foothold on the island, and so it wasn't until nearly a century later. The fourth Roman Emperor Claudius then sent a much larger army than Caesar did across the English Channel, and he captured and conquered the island of Great Britain for the glory of Rome's growing empire. But as we saw a little bit later in episode 19, many of the native Britons bristled at Roman rule. They didn't like it, and so they rebelled numerous times in a noble but futile effort to repel the Romans back across the English Channel. Now, their most serious uprising was led by the Celtic queen Boudica in AD 60, and it gave the emperor Nero a serious scare. Boudica, however, would perish, as would her army of over 100,000 Britons. And in the following decades, much of southern Great Britain assimilated, and the main sources of rebellion shifted to the highlands of what is now modern Wales and Scotland. And so, just 4 years into his reign, in AD 121, the Roman Emperor Hadrian began his tour of the northern extremes of his empire. And despite the decisive conquests of his predecessor Trajan, Hadrian inherited a Roman Empire still smarting from rebellions in hot spots across its vast expanse. We already talked about Jewish rebellions in several recent episodes, but also on the other end of the empire, all the way over in Great Britain, major uprisings surged in AD 119. And during the fighting, the so-called Lost Legion, the 9th Roman Legion, which was based in northern Britain at the city of Eboracum, that's the modern city of York, may have been annihilated in that uprising. Suddenly, the legion just disappears and we never hear from it again. It's kind of a mystery as to what happened. But whatever the fate of the 9th Legion was, we know that Hadrian's response was severe. He sent thousands of soldiers to quell the violence, and even he himself set foot on the island in the year AD 122. Now, by that time, the rebellion was a few years old. It was mostly quelled. But Hadrian understood a reality that many future Roman emperors would only come to learn through painful losses. And that is this, that the island of Great Britain was not going to be fully conquered by Rome. And so Hadrian, probably on the advice of the commanders in the region, decided instead to fortify the part of Great Britain that he held by building a wall across a narrow section of land between the Irish and North Seas. Now, Hadrian's Wall was 73 miles long. It was part of a new defensive strategy. And this was a radical reversal of the expansionistic policies that we saw under Trajan and other past emperors. So no longer would Roman borders be flexible and ideally expansive. Instead, Hadrian sought to solidify and fortify Roman borders in order to better defend against outsiders and regulate the movement of people and goods into and out of the Roman Empire. Hadrian spent less than a year in Britain, and if you've ever been there yourself, I happen to have lived there, you know why around wintertime he decided to jet out of there. It's marshy, it's fog-shrouded, and he would rather go to the sunnier coasts of southern Gaul and Spain. Most British people do the same thing to this day. He would never return. Hadrian would never make it back to Britain in his life, and so he would never actually see the masterpiece that still, nearly 2,000 years later, bears his name, Hadrian's Wall. So over a six-year period, starting in 122, a massive undertaking unfolded in the northern part of the island of Great Britain. Roman engineers and soldiers, local workers, probably even a bunch of slaves, toiled together to complete the wall out of stacked stone. Historians continue to debate the exact purpose of Hadrian's Wall, but one thing is clear, defense was paramount. Hadrian's Wall rose tall and thick, an intimidating bulwark against raids from the unconquered north. In some places, the stone runs about 12 feet tall and about 10 feet thick, and the designers probably intended the entire wall to keep those imposing dimensions, but either stone became hard to find or probably more likely, cash was tight. And so the wall was eventually narrowed to 8 feet. And then for a stretch, they didn't even use stone. They just built up a large earthen rampart. And, you know, aided by the many cliffs and crags of that landscape, if you've ever been there, you know what I'm talking about. There was also a deep trench that the Roman soldiers dug across the length of the wall. At this point, the thing worked. It was a fortification that would make unauthorized crossings into Roman Britain nearly impossible, at least on a large scale, without the say-so of the soldiers that manned the wall. But Hadrian's Wall is not just interesting because of how sort of long and thick it was. It was a kind of stretched-out city. At each mile, small forts and barracks guarded a gate through the wall, so there were a bunch of openings in the wall. And then between each of these mile forts were several watchtowers. And then there were also these large forts, almost the size of small settlements, that ran along the wall about every 7-ish miles or so. At any given time, thousands of men called the wall home. And so Hadrian's Wall wasn't just about keeping people out. It was a kind of vibrant community in and of itself. Archaeologists have excavated a bunch of these forts, and they have revealed precious artifacts that speak to daily life, what it was like for the people that lived at or near the wall. So one of the most interesting finds, for example, is a carved stone game board, and there is almost like a checkered pattern on the top of this board. It has 4 6-sided dice that were found with it, and they're laid out just like modern dice. They look exactly like modern dice, including, you know, even the placements of the dots. There are 2 shaker cups for the dice and about 40 game pieces made out of what looked like ceramic. And there are a lot of other games and game pieces that have been found at or near Hadrian's Wall. Now, were soldiers just playing games with each other? Well, no. Actually, we have evidence from the fort of Vindolanda, which is just to the south of Hadrian's Wall. And this fort had been occupied for a few decades prior to the construction of Hadrian's Wall. But what we find at that fort is evidence that families were around. We have a bunch of artifacts, children's shoes, a necklace showing a bride and a groom, a birthday invitation from the prefect's wife from the early 2nd century AD. The tablet is beautiful. You can see it on the British Museum website. The script is elegant. It seems to have been written in the hand of the prefect's wife herself. And the message just speaks to the humanity of these women. Claudia Severa to her Lepidina, greetings. On the 11th of September, sister, for the day of the celebration of my birthday, I give you a warm invitation to make sure that you come to us to make the day more enjoyable for me by your arrival. Give my greetings to your Cerealis. My Elias and my little son, send him their greetings. I shall expect you, sister. Farewell, sister, my dearest soul, as I hope to prosper and hail. That's Vindolanda Tablet number 291, a letter from Claudia Severa to Sulpicia Lepidina. These were obviously not just gruff military veterans living on the fort, but their families and what seems to be in this letter, children who are friends and cousins on the very edge of the empire with the blue-skinned Picts just on the other side. Here we see Romans living normal lives. It's absolutely fascinating. So there are the items themselves, but there are also implications from these items, where they came from and who made them. For example, some of the goods that have been found on Hadrian's Wall were imported, but it's clear that a lot of local artisans were involved and local materials so that this city of soldiers garrisoned near the wall could be provided with a variety of goods. Almost certainly, there were semi-regular markets popping up every few days, bustling with off-duty soldiers and locals, probably from both sides of the wall. We also find altars and statues and inscriptions that speak to the cultural exchange that happened there. So there are Latin inscriptions, for example, but the dedications are to local Celtic deities. No doubt many soldiers formed families with local women, further blending Roman customs and culture with those of Celtic Britain. One of the more interesting objects found by the wall is a grain measuring cup. Now, that doesn't sound interesting, but let me explain why it is. So the cup is copper, and it's meant to hold about a pint or so of grain for tax collection. And that's what it says on the inscription. But this cup, this container, was deviously crafted to hold about 10% more than it says it does. And if it was used as it was intended, which was probably to collect grain taxes from people in the area, then the Romans would have been systematically taking advantage of the local Britons. And it gives us some insight into why the British people were a little bit upset at Roman rule if they were being cheated even on their weights and measures. But the cup's also interesting for another reason. So we know the date that it was made because the cup used to include the name of the emperor under whom it was created, and that's the Emperor Domitian. But that name has been scratched out of the cup. And this is fascinating because it shows that even the owner of this container on the far end of the Roman Empire still complied with the order to condemn the memory of Domitian. And if you want to know why Domitian was so hated that even the owner of a measuring cup would scratch his name out of it, we talk about that on episode 27. But life on Hadrian's Wall was not all fun and games and carrying out the odd condemnation of memory. This was, after all, Northern England. It was cold, it was damp, and windy for over half the year. Imagine standing watch for hours on Hadrian's Wall, facing the biting cold wind and the relentless rain. And when not stationed on the wall itself, soldiers would have then been sent out into the northern expanse on patrols because they had to ensure that there was a buffer zone north of the wall that was clear of any settlements. It really does look like the Romans largely gave up on the northern part of the wall. There are some exceptions, but for the most part, we don't really find Roman pottery or coinage in significant numbers north of Hadrian's Wall. Foreign goods were allowed to enter the Roman side of the wall, but this trade doesn't appear to have been two-way. Hadrian's Wall would serve as the Roman frontier on the island of Great Britain for nearly 300 years. And while not an impenetrable barrier, it undoubtedly played a crucial role in managing relations with the tribes of northern Britain. The wall's presence deterred large-scale raids, and it allowed for the regulation of trade, and it provided a base for Roman military operations when they were needed in a province that had a history of rebellion. The Roman Empire's grip on Britain, however, was not permanent. It eventually loosened in the early 5th century, and Hadrian's Wall, which was once a bustling frontier, an elongated city across the northern reaches of the empire, eventually fell into decline. Over time, its stones were pilfered to build farmhouses and churches, leaving behind the magnificent remains that are still visible today. Hadrian's Wall is, in many ways, a symbol, not only of Rome's final and ruinous end, but also of the extent to which the Roman peace was an illusion. Hadrian's Wall ultimately could not protect the empire, and this was not only from outside invasions, but as we'll continue to see on this podcast, from Rome's own emperors and the fatal flaws of their arrogance, decadence, and unbridled power.
Thanks for listening to the Pax Romana podcast. For more information, including a list of primary sources and further reading, check the show notes. Music by Red Productions and Exocore. Follow Dr. Colin Elliott on X at ProfCPE or email colin@paxromanapodcast.com. Listen to more episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or just about anywhere podcasts are available. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Pax Romana podcast.